Welcome to Family Talk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, and today we're going to listen to a classic program featuring our former co-host, Luann Crane. So here now is how Luann opened the program on this classic edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Welcome to today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Luann Crane, and our host, as always, is psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. And as we get started, I first need to warn you parents that your children should not be within earshot of this program. But Dr. Dobson, the conversation we're about to hear is on a topic that unfortunately is even more relevant for our culture now than it ever has been.
And to those very children that you're talking about.
Yes.
What we're going to hear is an incredibly disturbing message, Luann, because it deals with the life of Ted Bundy, the serial murderer who confessed to killing 28 women and girls. He was also convicted and he died in an electric chair on January the 24th, 1989. And while he was on death row, he read the entire text of a report created by the Attorney General's Commission on Pornography, which I had a role in because I was a commissioner. And in that report, Ted Bundy saw himself. He recognized what we were trying to say and heard the testimonies of people who had been addicted to obscenity and child pornography. He saw the relationship between his involvement in pornography, especially hardcore violent pornography, and the murders that he committed. Florida State Attorney John Tanner, who has become a very good friend of mine, met with Ted Bundy in the prison while he was on death row for more than 200 visits. And the purpose that he went to the prison was to minister spiritually to Ted. John believes that Ted gave his heart to the Lord. Only God knows. But he gave every evidence of repenting and receiving the forgiveness that only God can provide. And there are some people, Luann, who would say that can't happen. The man who murdered all of those women in cold blood just for his own pleasure, later was forgiven by God. I'm sorry. That's what the Bible teaches.
It does.
That's what we believe, that there is no sin that that he can't forgive if there is genuine repentance and a request for forgiveness. And Ted told me that, and I think I believe it. But when a man is facing death, he will say nearly anything, and we won't know till we get to eternity if Ted is there.
And yet as humans, Doctor, it's so hard for us to imagine anything more horrific or violent or obscene as the acts he committed.
Well, I would not have forgiven him if I were God, which is a preposterous thing to say, because I'm sure some of the women and girls that he killed were not Christians, and then they will not be in heaven, and he might. I don't know how to explain that. Theologically, I can't get my arms around that. I just know that there is no sin that Jesus Christ can't forgive.
And for some people, Doctor, that's why someone tuned in today to hear that statement.
Well, yes, because it applies to all of us. There are a lot of people listening to us out there who have also done horrendous things. They may not have murdered people for sexual reasons, but they've done other things that they can't forgive themselves for. But if God can forgive Ted Bundy, then he certainly can forgive our listeners.
There's hope for us.
Well, when that series of events occurred, Ted Bundy asked John Tanner, the attorney I talked about, to contact me and tell me that when the time came for him to be executed, because he was on death row, he'd already been sentenced and he knew he was to die, and he asked John to tell me that when Ted's last appeal ran out, and he knew it eventually would, that he wanted to tell his story of how he became such a violent killer, a serial killer. And he chose me to get that message out because he was convinced the media would not repeat it. And he was right about that.
And he knew of you by reading that entire 2,000-page text that you had written while on the commission.
That's why he wanted John to call me. And despite the fact that I knew this would be one of the most difficult interviews I had ever done, I agreed to do it because I wanted that message to be out there too.
Yeah.
So 2 years went by from that first call to the second call, in which John Tanner called and said that Florida Governor Martinez had refused to commute Ted's sentence and that he was to be executed in a few days. So I immediately dropped everything. I jumped on a plane and went to Florida and up to the Florida State Penitentiary, which I have to tell you became one of the most bizarre experiences of my life.
I cannot even imagine, Doctor. In fact, just even preparing to replay it today, you've had to relive some of this, and just I can see the sobriety on your face.
I have tears in my eyes now because of what that whole episode meant to me. The night before the execution with Ted, I met with him through a glass. They wouldn't allow any contact on that night. And so I talked to him. I prayed with him. I put my hand up to the glass, and he matched it on the other side. You can tell in the interview that despite the fact that this was a vicious killer who showed no mercy to the girls that he killed, I mean, horrible ways that he killed them, that it was time for me to show compassion to him while not soft soaping what he had done, because you can't do that.
No.
I mean, it is without excuse.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just a crime of passion. It was just vicious murder.
Evil.
For sexual purposes. Mm-hmm. The last individual that he killed was a 12-year-old girl whom he raped and murdered and threw her body in a pigsty. Mm. So That will give you an idea who this man was.
And, Doctor, all of us are just sitting here and collectively closing our eyes and trying to shut this out because it's just too awful to hear. And yet, there's a reason why we have to come back and revisit this today.
Let's make it clear, Luann, this is not sensationalism.
No.
Our purpose here is not to tell stories that will captivate people. The purpose is to let folks know what pornography and especially obscenity and child pornography do in the hearts and minds of people. And so many of our boys are getting addicted to it when they're 13, 14, 15 years of age. Mm. And parents really need to understand it and as best as possible to protect them from it. We live in a culture that is completely awash with pornographic images. It's getting worse all the time.
Yeah.
And it's become accepted by so many people and so many judges who see it as just another form of entertainment. And it's a victimless crime. Yeah, we heard that often in the Pornography Commission. And some people even believe that the production and distribution of hardcore and child pornography is protected by the First Amendment. Mm. It's a First Amendment right. And that disgusts me. It's time that we opened our eyes to this evil and saw how it's destroying families, how it's destroying the innocence of children, and in some cases, why it is resulting in the deaths of many people, especially children.
And our listeners can hear the sober tone in our voice. But again, our sole purpose in airing this interchange today, Doctor, is to make a difference in the lives of families who are being ripped apart by pornography. So here now, we will begin to play your conversation with serial killer Ted Bundy.
Ted, it is about 2:30 in the afternoon. You are scheduled to be executed tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock if you don't receive
another stay. What is going through your mind? What thoughts have you had in these last few days?
Well, I won't kid you to say that it's something that I feel that I am in control of, or something that I've come to terms with, because I haven't. It's a moment by moment thing. Sometimes I feel very tranquil, and other times I don't feel tranquil at all. What's going through my mind right now is to use the minutes and hours that I have left as fruitfully as possible and see what happens. It helps to live in the moment in the essence that we use it productively. So right now I'm feeling calm, and in large part because I'm here with you.
For the record, you are guilty of killing many women and girls.
Yes. Yes, that's true.
Ted, how did it happen? Take me back. What are the antecedents of the behavior that we've seen? So much grief, so much sorrow, so much pain for so many people. Where did it start? How did this moment come about?
That's the question of the hour, and one that not only people much more intelligent than I have been working on for years, but one that I've been working on for years and trying to understand. Is there enough time to explain it all? I don't know. I think I understand it, though. Understand what happened to me, to the extent that I can see how certain feelings and ideas developed in me to the point where I began to act out on them. Certain very violent and very destructive feeling.
Let's go back then to those roots. First of all, you, as I understand it, were raised in what you considered to have been a healthy home.
Absolutely.
You were not physically abused. You were not sexually abused. You were not emotionally abused.
No, no way. And that's part of the tragedy of this whole situation, is because I grew up in a wonderful home with two dedicated and loving parents, one of five brothers and sisters. A home where we as children were the focus of my parents' lives, where we regularly attended church. Two Christian parents who did not drink, they did not smoke, there was no gambling, there was no physical abuse or fighting in the home. I'm not saying this was leave it to Beaver.
It wasn't a perfect home.
Well, no, I don't know that such a home exists, but it was a fine, solid Christian home, and nobody, I hope no one will try to take the easy way out and to try to blame or otherwise accuse my family of contributing to this, because I know, and I'm trying to tell you as honestly as I know how, what happened, and I think this is a message I want to get across.
How can we account for it then? If a psychologist or psychiatrist had evaluated you at 10 years of age, would they have seen the roots of what happened?
I seriously doubt it. I seriously doubt that they would have seen the roots at 16 years of age, or even at, 18, 19, 20 years of age. This is a very difficult thing to detect in someone, and not someone, but let me focus again on myself, because I don't want to be abstract here. This is something I concealed within myself, and part of the nature of the problem, the disorder that I suffered, and I say suffered from, was that I kept it so closely hidden that no one could see it. It was so closely guarded and so closely kept that no one outside of myself was aware of it.
You're talking now about sexual fantasies, is that
right?
Well,
and in time, the behavior that flowed from them, the acting out or the kinds of activities that were related to them, yes, absolutely.
Now, you told me last night when we had a few minutes together that early on, you were exposed to pornography.
Well, yes. That's a broad term, and you know that pornography consists of many different kinds of media, literature, books, films, and I know personally from experience that there are many different things that I would consider pornography. But as a young boy, and I mean the boy of 12, 13, certainly, that I encountered outside the home again in the local grocery store, or the local drugstore, the softcore pornography, what people call softcore. But as I think I explained to you last night, Dr. Dobson, in an anecdote, that as young boys do, we explored the back roads and sideways and byways of our neighborhood, and oftentimes people would dump the garbage and whatever they were cleaning out of their house, and from time to time we'd come across pornographic books of a harder nature than, more graphic, you might say, more explicit nature than we would encounter, let's say, in your local grocery store. And this also included such things as, let's say, detective magazines and more.
Those that involve violence.
Yes, yes. And I this is something I think I want to emphasize, is the most damaging kinds of pornography. And I'm talking from personal experience, hard, real personal experience. The most damaging kinds of pornography are those that involve violence and sexual violence. Because the wedding of those two forces, as I know only too well, brings about behavior that is just too terrible to describe.
Now, walk me through that. You were exposed early on, 12 or 13 years of age, to softcore pornography, began to get hooked on it, interested in it. Then, almost accidentally, you were exposed to more violent kinds of hardcore pornography. What was going on in your mind at that time? What was happening?
Okay, before we go any further, I think it's important to me and that people believe what I'm saying, to tell you that I'm not blaming pornography and not saying that it caused me to go out and do certain things. That I take full responsibility for whatever I've done and all the things that I've done. That's not the question here. The question and the issue is how this kind of literature contributed and helped mold and shape the kinds of violent behavior.
It fueled your fantasies, didn't it?
Well, in the beginning, it fuels this kind of thought process. Then, at a certain time, it's instrumental in what I would say crystallizing it, making it into something which is almost like a separate entity inside. And at that point, you're at the verge, or I was at the verge of acting out on these kinds of thoughts.
Now, I really want to understand that. You had gone about as far as you could go in your own fantasy life with printed material, and you made or printed and video or film
magazines, yeah. What have you.
And then there was the urge to take that little step or big step over to a physical event.
And it happened in stages, gradually. It doesn't necessarily, not to me at least, happen overnight. But getting back to, I think your question was just how does this evolve? What's the process like? And we don't have the time to go into it step by step, but I'll try to summarize it. I don't want to, because we only have an hour, we're going to have to simplify some things. I don't mean to say, however, this is a simple problem. Now, my experience with, I'd say, pornography generally, but with pornography that deals on a violent level with sexuality, is that once you become addicted to it, and I look at this as a kind of addiction, like other kinds of addiction, I would keep looking for more potent, more explicit, more graphic kinds of material. Now, as a young kid growing up in a suburban neighborhood in the 50s and early 60s, there were no X-rated bookstores in the corner, and certainly what you'd find in a drugstore was not what you would call hardcore. So fortunately, I guess you could say fortunately at that time, my experience would tell me my fantasy life and my interest in pornography was not unlike that of my peers, curious boys interested in the things of a sexual nature. At that time, again, this was not something that developed in something which was very potentially, at that time, dangerous. What happened, however, is that as I grew older and had greater mobility and could go to places that sold and trafficked in the more explicit, harder core material, then I could avail myself of this material. And for instance, when I left my hometown and went to a larger town where I went to college, again, I had available to me stores and shops and what have you that dealt with even more explicit material. So it was a progressive kind of thing. And again, my experience is very vivid here. And I kid you not, like an addiction, you keep craving something which is harder, something which gives you a greater sense of excitement, until you reach the point where the pornography only goes so far. You reach that jumping off point where you begin to wonder if maybe actually doing it will give you that which is beyond just reading about it or looking at it.
How long did you stay at that point before you actually assaulted someone?
Well, yeah, you see, that is a very delicate point in my own development. And we're talking about having reached a point or a gray area that surrounded that point over a course of years.
You don't remember
of years.
How long?
Well, I would say a couple years. And what was I was dealing with there were very strong inhibitions against criminal behavior or violent behavior that had been conditioned into me, bred into me in my environment, in my neighborhood, in my church, in my school. Things which said, no, this is wrong. I mean, even to think of it is wrong, but certainly to do it is wrong. And I'm on that edge, and the last vestiges of restraint, the barriers to actually doing something were being tested constantly and assailed through the kind of fantasy life that was fueled largely by pornography.
Well, there really are no words to describe how chilling Ted Bundy's comments are to all of us, especially those of us who are parents who still have children in the home, mm-hmm. Doctor. Here on this Family Talk broadcast, you've been hearing a unique interview with serial killer Ted Bundy, recorded just hours before he was executed at the Florida State Penitentiary. And again, Dr. Dobson, I cannot imagine how difficult it was for you to sit across from this man who admitted to brutally murdering at least 28 women and girls.
You know, Luann, I mentioned at the top of the program that the first night that I got to the Florida State Prison, I met with Bundy through the glass. Mm-hmm. The next day it was face-to-face, but that first night it was through the glass, and he was exhausted mm-hmm. because he had decided on behalf of the families whose daughters and mothers had been killed to tell him as much as he could remember. So that's where the 28 girls and women came from. Mm. But it is estimated that he probably killed more than 100.
Oh,
and
my.
He couldn't recall the details of the others because there were so many. Mm. It went on for years and years. And except for a fluke where they caught him, he could have done it for many more years after that. Mm. Make no mistake about it, though. Pornography is a social cancer. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. If you have a psychologist or physician who says you're having some sexual problems in your marriage, why don't you spice it up a little bit with obscenity or pornography? Don't go there. I'm telling you, it will have an effect on both of you. And the effect will be different for the husband than for the wife. Mm-hmm. And it'll undermine the sexual basis of your relationship because there's nothing in reality that can possibly compete with airbrushed nudity and sexuality that's been specifically designed to capture.
Which is why, Doctor, we're bringing this provocative conversation to our Family Talk listeners. It's so hard to listen to, but as you just indicated, so incredibly important. Mm-hmm. We will have more to come tomorrow of this historical interview with Ted Bundy. In the meantime, if you have learned that your own child has begun looking at pornography, or maybe even you yourself are doing so, we want to help you. The phone number to call 877-732-6825, or even if you feel more comfortable online, drjamesdobson.org. We would love to talk with you and probably put you in touch with a Christian counselor right where you live so that you can get the help you need and begin the process of breaking free from this addiction. Or maybe you don't have a problem with this personally, but you want to find out what you can do to fight this in our culture. Find some resources you can link up with at drjamesdobson.org. And here in the close, we do also want to thank Focus on the Family today for granting us their permission to air Dr. Dobson's interview with Ted Bundy, which was part of the video they produced called Fatal Addiction.
You've been listening to the first part of a classic program here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, and if you would like more information about the Ministry of Family Talk or to listen to other classic programs, please visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us at 877-732-6825. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again next time for the conclusion of our program today, right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.